coming to you live from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who always has a wide variety on the podcast menu. I am Rob's sister, Nino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Here talking about The Edge of Extinction season premiere. And we've got a great guest for you today here on the podcast. Kimmy Kappenberg will be joining me to talk about everything from the premiere. Of course, she played with Joe and Kelly in Survivor Cambodia. Talk about everything from last night with Kelly Wentworth. Of course, if you missed it last night, the Survivor know-it-alls that Kimmy Kappenberg's work spouse, Stephen Fishback, and I went over everything on our live season premiere of the Survivor know-it-alls. That is up on robisawebsite.com. No exit press this season. So if you're looking for an exit interview, refreshing your feed, sorry to say that we are not going to be getting exit interviews with the survivors because who knows if and when they're coming out of the game. So sorry about that if you're looking forward to it. But those are the breaks here on Survivor Edge of Extinction. We've got our feedback show with Arissa Cox coming up this weekend. So get your questions in for that. Then we will also have a separate podcast where we're going to have some fun with Jordan Kalish on This Week in Survivor History. We're going to break that out as a separate thing. Going to try something new this week. Do a couple other things along the way there in that episode. And then also we'll have the Wiggle Room with Josh Wiggler all in your Rob Has a Podcast feed. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. We greatly appreciate it when you give us your feedback and star ratings here at the start of the season. Let me do a quick message from our sponsor today before we get into Kimmy Kappenberg. I am not an authority on many things, but there is one thing that I do know quite a bit about, and that is collared shirts. And that is our sponsor here today, Untuck It. Here's a tip for everybody. Listen, no guy looks good in long, bulky dress shirts when they're untucked. You might think it looks casual, but it ends up looking sloppy. That's because it's not meant to be worn that way. Untuck It makes shirts that are specifically designed to be worn untucked. Guys, it's not a great look if you're out there and you've got this Aubrey thing going on where your shirt is hanging down so low that people can't tell, is he wearing pants even? That's where Untuck It comes in. Not too long, not too short. People don't want to see your belly button either for that clean, casual look that you can wear at the office. With more than 50 combinations, Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. I wore mine on the Survivor Know-It-Alls last night talking to Stephen Fishback. Go to untuckit.com or visit one of Untuck It's 50 stores across the United States and Canada. Untuck It even offers free shipping and free returns on all orders in the United States. Use promo code ROB for 20% off your first purchase. So if you want the perfect fitting shirt, regardless of your shape or size, try the original untucked shirt. And remember, use the promo code ROB for 20% off your first purchase at untuckit.com. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today to talk about the Survivor Edge of Extinction premiere. It is my pleasure to welcome back with us the two-time Survivor icon, Kimmy Kappenberg. Kimmy, how are you?
Woohoo! Yay! I am great. I'm doing very well, thank you. A little bit jelly that I didn't get a third shot, but I'm still waiting.
Not yet. Not yet, Kimmy.
Not yet. What'd it take? Only 14 years or so between the first season.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I have another 11 years to wait.
If you went back now, you'd be ahead of schedule.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. So Kimmy, I was so happy that you reached out before the season started, said that you wanted to talk about this season, and which makes me thrilled when anybody does that, especially you, and that you wanted to come on and talk about this. What was the appeal about this season? Was it that Joe and Kelly were going to be back?
Yes. Yes, it was. Having a chance to play with both of them, and seeing them in past seasons, it's just great to see a player's growth. And then it's also, you know, with the second season that we all played on together, it was all returning players.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a very different challenge for them. And I want to see how far they can get, and David and Aubrey, playing against new players, because that's a whole nother challenge for returning players. That's for sure, in my opinion.
Okay, enough about them right now. Let's get back to you. What are you up to these days?
Well, let's see. I moved after my season ended and aired. What was that? Like 3 years ago in December.
Yeah, I think it was the 2015. I think.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, in those 3 years, I've had a lot go on. I moved from Texas to Florida. Unfortunately, I lost my brother. My brother died 2 months after that season ended.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, Kimmy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, it was terrible, but it made me want to get closer to family.
Yeah.
So I moved to Florida to be with my mom and dad. And six weeks later, I met and fell in love with the love of my life. And, got married 9 months after. So I've been married, you know, over a year now. And we relocated to South Carolina. And so now I have family in New York and family down in Florida that I can go back and forth and see. And,
yeah.
You know, just being a housewife is a big, huge, different thing for me.
Yes. Well, congratulations on the romance, Kimmy.
Yeah. Very romantic.
Yes, and then that's nice that at least you're on the East Coast again, and so that you're able to, it's not as difficult to travel around.
No, and it makes it a heck of a lot easier being in the same time zone. I mean, just being 1 hour time zone off, mm-hmm. I mean, it just really screws you up when you want to visit or even make a dang phone call.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. And your boys are doing good?
Oh my gosh, my boys are great. They both made AB honor roll. My 12-year-old is 6'1". So I walk around in like these giant hooker heel shoes so that way I can be taller than him. And even those aren't working right now. Like, he's like, "Mommy, you need bigger shoes." I'm like, "All right, smart Cam."
He's 6'1" and he's 12?
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
And he's a bottomless pit. I can't stop feeding him. There's just not enough food.
And you're tall too, right?
Yeah, I'm about 5'10".
Yeah.
So I'm shrinking out of existence, but yes. So that's why I'm sitting here going, all right. You know, when I got to look up to my 12-year-old, and he was taller than me when he was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, dang, you know, I still want to be the mommy figure.
Okay. Well, Kimmy, happy to hear everybody's doing good.
Yes, we are doing great.
Okay. Kimmy, let's talk about this from last night. Of course, you played with Joe and Kelly. Kelly was more in the middle of things last night, where Joe's tribe was able to avoid going to tribal council for this first week. How did you think that Kelly fared in the first night back?
I mean, I think that Kelly was smart, because right from the beginning, she said, you know, she's a little bit of a closed off person, but she realized the importance of making an alliance. So I know that she does want to get on alliance right away. And I think it was her and Lauren that, you know, they were bonding over volleyball discussions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was good that she found somebody that has a commonality, so that way she can go and do things. But then, of course, Wendy's seeing them as a power couple. So, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I think it's very important that Kelly does make an alliance. And she seems to be doing that. I felt badly for her on the challenge, though, when she fell and whacked her head.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she is such a strong player.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's one of those things where Survivor is an equalizer, and even when you're on top of your game, and you know, she's a great player, she's a great physical player, and she's a very smart player, but people saw her fall, and she had the wounds from the challenge to prove it.
What was your relationship like with Kelly on Second Chance? Because I remember that you were anti the witch's coven, right? But then you guys were working together when you guys went to that tie vote between you tried to get Jeremy out at the final six. So did you have a good friendship with Kelly?
Kelly and I, because she did come in during one of the tribe swaps. So, of course, she was an outsider, because we were all very much Bion strong. So Kelly, in our book, you know, the outsiders from the other tribe, it was easier to go and vote them off. So of course I was just staying with my core in the beginning, you know, especially like Wigglesworth and Fishback and Jeremy and them. But after a while, you know, you got to use people because they're using you too. Mm-hmm. So Kelly and I mean, I like Kelly, and Kelly and I, we had a lot of times when there was a reward challenge, it was me and her, sitting, you know, we the only thing that we ate that day was a handful of dry rice, not even a handful, like literally a spoonful. And we were just talking about our dads and our families and stuff. And so we really got to get close. I mean, you know how it is when you're out there, there's only so much that you can talk about to the people that you've been with for 10, 20 days. And then when you get, you know, a new person to talk to, you find out that they're not always the enemy. And that commonality is something that can bring them to your side to help you in the vote. Mm-hmm. But I mean, unfortunately, when it came down to my tribal that I got voted off on, my 10-year-old Cannon is still holding a grudge. He's like, I don't like her. He saw her last night and he's like, I want her to get voted out, mommy, because she voted you out. She told them to let you go that night. I was like, dang.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a little bitter. Yeah. He was 7 at the time. So yeah. Now he's like, no, mommy, you can't root for her.
You know, Kimmy, I don't remember that. With all due respect, I don't remember the exact circumstances of how that all went down. I know that there was so you had wanted to make the flip, and then you were going to vote with Kelly and with Keith and try to vote out Jeremy. So how did it end up coming back on you? It was Keith Nail said he would have gone to the house, right?
Yes. Well, because Jeremy Spencer had the immunity necklace.
Yes.
And then Jeremy went and played a hidden immunity idol. And then Kelly played the hidden immunity idol. So Tasha, Spencer, and Jeremy had voted out, you know, had put down Kelly's name, and then Kelly, me, and Keith put down Jeremy's name. And, you know, when it came down to it, it was like a tiebreaker of some sorts. And,
yeah. 0-0. Right.
And then my original alliance with Jeremy, they felt so betrayed that they put my name down, and we were all going to put down Tasha's name. And it just spiraled out of there. Mm-hmm. Because then had no one wanted to break that tie, then Keith would have went home. And then it was like, okay, well, Keith really didn't do anything. So, you know, that tribal was about 2 hours and reading the fine print of the rules of Survivor.
Yeah.
In 31 seasons that had never come up before.
Do you feel like Kimmy, if you would have somehow been able to stay instead of Keith, that, that you could have either gotten back with, Jeremy and Spencer and Tasha, or it just would have been a matter of moving up one place?
You know what? You don't know.
You don't know.
You just don't know. That's the problem with this game, because anybody can tick somebody off out there and you can start opening up somebody's eyes. I mean, maybe, you know, Jeremy could have talked to him. Maybe, you know, Tasha, I could have got her to flip and been like, look, we can have the three girls at the end, because there was no way that Keith and Spencer were breaking up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jeremy was so smart, because he knew, just because of the dynamics of the group, that nobody was going to put down Keith or Spencer's name to win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a chance to have somebody put my name down to win, and so did Wentworth. So you bring the people that aren't going to win. I mean, at the bottom line is, everybody wants $1 million to bring home to your family. And Jeremy was very smart. And my biggest problem is, I should have known that Jeremy had another idol, because he played the one for Fishback throughout the game.
Right.
And there's no way that a man that loves his family so much would go and waste that idol on somebody else.
Steven, of all people. Right. Pocket. Right.
Yes. So, I mean, but at that point, you're just delirious with thinking. And I should have said, let's vote off Tasha.
That's a really good point, though, because that came up last season, too, where we saw that Dan played an idol on Angelina. And if somebody is playing idols for people, then it's a good sign that maybe they have another one.
Yes. And, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But when you're out there with the food deprivation and the exhaustion and the sleep deprivation, because you're not getting very good sleep out there. I mean, you just sit there and honestly, like at the one challenge, Keith couldn't even remember Tasha's name when he won the award. You know what I mean? But that's how it gets. I mean, you could have probably asked me what my phone number was, the phone number that I've had for 16 years, mm-hmm. and I probably couldn't tell you. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just gets to the point where you're just, okay, well, let me get out the threat, not realizing that sometimes when you take out the support system, that hurts the threat just as much.
Kimmy, you said that Keith had no chance to win the game. I thought everybody liked Keith Nail.
No, everybody likes Keith. It's not like he didn't have a chance.
But you said he would have gotten no votes at the end.
I mean, I don't know that he would have got no votes, but I think me and Wentworth and Jeremy had better chances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at my final tribal council, you had six players that were there.
Yes.
And of those six, Keith, Jeremy, and Wentworth, they had not only played previously within a couple of years, but they played together on the same season.
Yeah.
And then you had Tasha and Spencer, who played together on a season. And then you have me, who played, 14, 15 years prior.
Yeah.
And I came a long way with learning the new rules of the game, because the game has changed so much.
Yeah.
You know, with hidden immunity idols and finding these alliances right away. I mean, it's been a very different dynamic from the first couple of seasons to the latter ones.
Mm-hmm. Then had you kept in touch with Kelly since then to now?
No, I mean, every once in a while, you know how it is. After the season first ends, everybody goes and, you know, you send messages once in a while and back and forth. And it's just something that fades out. You know, you might get on Facebook and send him a message and whatnot. But It's just, you know, your immediate life takes over, you know, just like people, they lose touch with some college friends. Or something.
Or,
you know, you wish them a Facebook birthday wish or something. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's not like we're buddies, but yeah. I mean, I love the girl.
And Kimmy, I know that you have your real life, but is there one survivor in particular that you keep up with the most?
I mean, Fishback and I used to go and talk all the time. I mean, I love my island husband. However, you know, again, life just happens, but it's like every once in a while, you shoot a random message like, Jeremy and I messaged Jeremy like, oh, I'm thinking about you. And we do that a couple times a year just because it's like, okay, Survivor coming back. And it made me think of Bayonne Beach. And I was on Bayonne Beach with Jeremy for 36 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you remember those things.
Okay. I want to talk with you about the woman that we saw get voted out last night. And that was Reem, who yes. I thought was a lot of fun. I didn't love the idea of this twist where we're going to, you know, keep people around. But then I was happy that like, oh, okay, I'm good. I'm glad we don't have to say goodbye to Reem yet. what was your opinion on Reem?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't like that she says I wasn't going to tell people how old I was and that I'm a mom.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's 47. It's not like she's 77.
Yeah.
You know, so 47, you're still a very healthy and fit, capable individual. And lots of women that have played Survivor, you know, probably like a quarter to a third have gone out there as moms, you know, and there are just as many dads out there, too. Mm-hmm. So, I think that she's got a lot to bring, and her personality is definitely one that you want to see because she doesn't back down. I mean, Jeff even said, are you a confrontational person over at Tribal Council? But I didn't understand her going and taking other people's stuff that were like, you know, wet clothes that were drying on trees and lying them down in the sand. Because the sand is not going to dry anything. You know, it's going to make you itchy and wet and, you know, attract more bugs than the trees and the open breeze. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a common question when I asked the listeners to, you know, what are the kinds of things you want to hear Kimmy talk about? And the idea that Reem brought up about how, this was age bias, that this was because I was a mom, that they wanted to vote me out. That is very common that we see a woman who is a mom end up being the first person voted out. Do you think that Reem was a victim of that stigma, or do you think that it was what Reem did that got her voted out?
I think it's what Reem did that got her voted out. I mean, she had advantages. I mean, even Wendy said that she appreciates the mom figure in her because she's lonely. So did Keith. Keith said, you know, he's a 19-year-old mama's boy. So you have that comfort and advantage. I think the problem was that Keith couldn't swim. Wendy, you know, she even admitted that she's a little bit socially awkward with her Tourette's. And I think that it was a natural draw for Reem to go to them and teach Keith how to swim and whatnot. Well, when you have three people that may be perceived as, you know, weaker, and it's just an easier target for any one of the three to be having their name written down first. And I think with Reem clashing, I mean, even at tribal council, when she was talking to Wentworth, she's like, what do I have to do to show you I'm strong? You know, you want me to have a wrestling match with Wentworth? You know what I mean? Like, she's feisty and a good personality, you know, to watch. Mm-hmm. But I think the arguments, and I think her, you know, taking people's clothes and they can't find them and stuff. It's just, you know, everybody wants to come together, and isolating those three people made it a lot easier for the other seven to be like, okay, you know what? The first three tribal councils, this is going to be an easy pick. And it just, you know, it just so happened to be Reem got more of the votes.
Was the idea of there being any sort of like bias against the mom type something that was in your head when you went back to play a second time, or anything that you tried to change while you were there?
No, I mean, I wanted to not be like a mom. I wanted to be more like the cool aunt. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, the one that's going to, you know, have your cover story when you're sneaking out late or something. You know? And I think, yeah, I mean, you have a maternal instinct or you don't. And especially when you do have kids, you have, you know, you tend to have that nurturing vibe in you. But I just think that, you know, Reem, she was clumsy. She was a lot of fun, but when I was out there, I made sure I pulled my weight. I didn't try to draw any attention to me. And in my head, when I was playing, it's I'm going to do everything I can to just kind of blend in, give my opinions on things, and get the hell out and let everybody else decide. So I wasn't a doormat and I was actively participating, but I wasn't going to go and smother everyone.
Mm-hmm. And that was different than what you did the first time that you went out there. Was that something that you changed consciously, or was that just something that, you know, with 14, 15 years, you know, you're not the same person that went to go play in the Outback?
No, I mean, the first time I played, I was single, 20-something, New Yorker, you know, made it on my own, did everything on my own, and I knew it all. Mm-hmm. Well, in my 40s, you kind of learn that you don't know a damn thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it was a completely different perspective. And, you know, then you know how the game was. The first time I went out there with the mindset of, hey, I'm going on an adventure. The second time was, I'm getting some redemption. I want to push myself and be an example to my kids to show them that, you know, what second chances do happen. You might not have gotten, you know, the results you wanted the first time with something, but you adapt to the environment and the rules of the game, so to speak, mm-hmm. in life, and you go with it. And that's what I found worked for me. You know, I had some really good connections out there.
So, I thought that Reem was, you know, a really big personality to go out on this first vote. And I was talking with somebody last night about, you know, the Mount Rushmore of first people off of Survivor. And on my Mount Rushmore of the first people off, I said, OK, I think I would have Sonia, but I think I would also have Deb from back in the Australian outback. And again, and Deb is another person who is a woman who I think she was she in her 40s when you guys played?
Probably.
Yes.
Golly, you know, I feel bad about the whole damn Deb vote. I really do. Because, but for me, you know, again, when you first get out there, it was kind of like, okay, well, she was a little bit awkward with some of the conversations that we had the first night, like when everybody was kind of goofing off in the tent that we made in the camp. So it was kind of like, okay, I don't want to be the first one voted off. Everybody's voting for her. Well, then I'm not voting for her. Well, I'm going to vote for her because it saves my ass and my ass from embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I think it's just the easy target. And I feel so bad because Deb is so sweet and she's so nice. And, you know, when you go back in hindsight, it's like, oh, I should have done a little bit more, changed my ways, but what I could have, should have.
But that's what happens on these first votes where, you know, that it's, you know, a name gets out there and then it just sort of snowballs where then, you know, I think that, you know, Reem hadn't done anything that was too bad. But then once she heard that her name was out there, then it really spun out of control for her. Was that the same for Deb?
Well, there's a big difference with Deb's vote out and Reem's vote out because Reem didn't even get the majority of the votes.
Mm-hmm.
She only got four votes and five other votes were distributed between three other names.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Deb, it was a unanimous vote. So that kind of tends to hit your heart a little bit harder because then it's like, you know, okay, everybody hated me. Like even Reem over in the conversation at Tribal Council, you know, Wardog was like, okay, we all like everybody but one person. And she's like, okay, well, everybody hates me. And he's like, no, that's not even it. And Wardog didn't even put Reem's name down. He put Wendy's name down.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't sit there when only four people voted for you and take it as a giant attack when other names were written down. You know, it wasn't a unanimous thing. So it's not quite as humiliating, I would suppose.
Kimmy, were you scared that it was going to be you? Because if I remember from that first episode from your first season, you know, you guys are all, talking and it's late at night. And like Jeff Varner is like, oh, my God, like I want to go to sleep. She just keeps talking. So it seemed like that there were some potential votes coming your way.
Well, but also the first night, it was a little bit dramatic, but everybody was having a conversation and a little bit inappropriate. But I think it was just like that anxious, nervous energy that everybody was feeding off of each other. I mean, everybody was talking about farting for some reason, either Varner farted or something. And Deb's like, well, I don't do that. And then it came the conversation of, well, everybody, you know, everybody needs to fart. Let one out. You won't be so uptight, you know, and it was. I mean, it was just silly, stupid, juvenile stuff. But I think it's that anxious, nervous energy with anticipation that just culminated. And then once you're out there showing your abilities and capabilities, I didn't think that I was going to get any votes out, you know, at Tribal Council because unfortunately, Deb wasn't wasn't meshing quite as well with everybody else. So it was kind of like, you know, just let her go because it was an easier vote.
Yeah. Well, Kimmy, I could listen to Deb's stories all day, but let me get back to season 38. So they ended up giving us this Edge of Extinction twist this season. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know your thoughts on it and how you thought it landed last night.
You know, whenever you have an opportunity to come back, like get voted off, I think it's a good twist. You know, they're trying to change it because it's been going on for a while. But I mean, obviously, if I was playing out there and I got voted off, it's like, okay, I want a chance to redeem myself. So I mean, that was kind of cool, especially with a personality like Reem getting voted off, because you know that she'd be an interesting person to watch. yes. season. So having the edge of extension and the opportunity to bring that drama back, you know, I think it's great. I mean, there's sometimes when it works out and sometimes it doesn't, but I'm excited now because I did like Reem's personality because it is an entertaining value.
Yeah. Kimmy, but wouldn't you be scared where they like, oh, okay, sure, let me go get a chance to get back into the game. But then they bring you in that boat and then there's like nothing there. It's like, okay, get off in the middle of the night. Like, I don't know if you'd be scared if they drop you off in the daytime. But I mean, I remember when I played in the Amazon, like we got to where we were going to play and it was like almost night. And like the first time, like it turned nighttime when we were there, I was petrified and the game didn't even start and we were with everybody.
Yes. Well, there'll be a little bit of comfort as far as at least by yourself. You know that when you're out there, that you don't have to worry about anybody stabbing you in the back. I mean, and truly, are you ever exactly really alone? Because you do have a cameraman.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so, but it looked pretty dark.
Yes. But I do think it was funny, though, because when she left Tribal Council, you know, she's mumbling under her breath, I hope it pours rain down on these people. Well, then it starts raining. And now here she is, not only going to this edge of extinction, but now it's in the middle of the night. Like you said, she doesn't know where she is and it's pouring rain on her. So, you know, she had to really go and figure it out with the elements not in her favor. But, I think at that point, she's probably so exhausted that she'd probably have a better sleep there than everybody trying to snuggle up on the shelter.
Oh, you think so? And they didn't even have a fire there.
Well, she had her little torch.
I guess so. I guess so. I mean, you're right. I didn't even think about that.
Set the torch there next to you or whatever. Try to find some dry wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that once they get it set up, I feel like that maybe it might not be so bad, but I feel like that would be very rough to be, you know, sitting there and you're so bored anyway. It's not like we, you know, they have these seasons where, okay, go to, you know, Redemption Island or go to Exile Island for a day and then you come back. I mean, this cause she could be set up here for a couple of weeks, Reem.
Yeah, we have no idea, but you know, I mean, the longer that she stays, the longer that she's in the game. So, it's a fun little twist and opportunity, I think.
Yeah. I just hope that she, you know, every single person that shows up there, that she's there to just like chew them out. That's what I would really like to see on.
Well, I mean, and I would imagine that they would have to either give her some rice or fishing gear. I mean, maybe nothing, but I mean, there's got to be a coconut on the island. I mean, it's almost like, okay, all your supplies now are yours to do with what you want. And you don't have to worry about people sabotaging or hoarding. And I mean, maybe she'll do better off there for a little bit. You just don't know.
Maybe you just have to worry about moving anybody's clothes. Like this might be a good setup for Reem.
Right. There's no laundromat that needs to be taken care of. She'll do well there.
Yeah.
I mean, I would know that I would do well there. I mean, especially since she is a mom, you know, you want that peace and quiet. You never get peace and quiet. So now she can go and appreciate the stillness of her little island.
Yeah. The other returnee with there with Kelly is David. Do you have any feelings about David?
I mean, I think that David is being optimistic. I think that David isn't perceived as such a threat. So I don't know. David is smart and he has the attitude that he wants to go out there and be a friend for people. And I think that's, you know, that's good. He wants to be a friend and people are coming to him. He's not being bossy and showing off. They're coming to him and asking opinions. So I think that he may last a little bit longer until strategy comes in. Then they're going to want him to go.
Mm-hmm. I saw that there was some talk online that people felt like that Kelly came off like a villain a little bit last night. Did you get that at all?
I don't know if I saw her as a villain, but I saw her probably feeling more comfortable that she was with the majority of her tribe, you know, the seven that were kind of seeing, you know, Wendy and Reem and Keith together. So I feel like she felt a little bit more secure. Mm-hmm. So maybe not, you know, maybe a little bit of comfortability got to her, but I don't know so much about being a villain.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, these shows where, you know, Kelly is, you know, presented as an underdog through, you know, certainly the, you know, the second chance season. And she's, you know, the most, you know, unlikely of underdogs there as somebody who, you know, came from her first season and then came back. And then, you know, nobody was expecting her to play the game that she played the second time around. But, you know, the audience, they root for the underdog. And now all of a sudden, you know, Kelly is not seen as the underdog. She's part of like the big alliance that's picking who's going to go home. And all of a sudden she could be doing the exact same stuff, but now she's in the majority. And it's like, hey, we're rooting for, you know, scrappy underdog Reem to, you know, stick up for herself against the people that are trying to knock her out of the game.
Yeah, and I think that people are also gonna be going for Reem's little alliance. Wendy, that's the girl with Tourette's.
Yeah, Wendy and Keith.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wendy, I think, because she showed her loyalty from the beginning, mm-hmm. and said that she likes her being a mom and said that, you know, she's my alliance, because the two people, Wardog and I think it was David that went to her.
Yes.
And said, hey, we want to write down Reem's name. And then because of her loyalty, they saw that as a threat and wrote her name down at tribal council. So I think that her being an underdog, just with her sweet nature and showing her loyalty, and that was already perceived as a threat by some big guys in the game. Mm-hmm. So I think that people are going to root for Wendy also.
Kimmy, isn't it crazy how far, you know, Survivor has gone, where then you have like two people like Wendy and Reem, and they go to talk to Wendy and they're saying, okay, we're going to vote out Reem. She's like, no, I won't do that. She's my friend. And it's like, what? Yes. What is like, what is wrong with this psychopath? Why won't she vote? She won't vote her friend out. What is she's crazy. Work with a person like this.
Well, you've got to find those connections, and then you never know. I mean, in the back of her head, she may be thinking, I mean, she might be, Wendy might be sweet and innocent on the outside, but she might be thinking on the inside, okay, I already know that they don't like her. Let me keep her, because then she'll be an easy vote off later on. Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't know what's in somebody's head. I mean, you can't think that everybody's as naive as they appear to be, or their decisions seem to be, because there's a lot of time to think and evaluate and reevaluate while you're out there. So, I mean, Wendy may have an ulterior motive for having Reem's back, but the beautiful thing about Survivor when you're out there is that you're bringing in people with such diverse backgrounds. They're, you know, their geographic backgrounds, their ages, their sexuality, their religions, their intelligence, and people who would not ordinarily cross paths in life. They're coming together and they're finding a connection. I mean, when would Wendy and Reem ever meet in the real world? Mm-hmm. They most likely wouldn't. But out there, because they were kind of outcasted, even though they were both coming to a common bond to help Keith, they found a connection that in the normal world you wouldn't. And that's the beautiful thing about Survivor.
Yeah. No, that's a really great point. I saw a article that was written yesterday about that. And it talks about Survivor being, you know, a very unique show where you have all these different people from, you know, all these different backgrounds. And, you know, in a perfect world, you know, anybody can win Survivor. We see, you know, all these different people, yep. from like all these different walks of life come in, yep. and win the show. And, you know, it is, you know, a unique thing in that way.
Yes. I mean, it definitely brings everybody into an even playing ground, and things that you think would be assets can sometimes hurt you. I mean, Joey, amazing. I mean, he's a physical asset, but the things that make him strong, and he's a really super nice guy, but that also is your weakness out there because people target you for your strength. I mean, just as easily as they target somebody, you know, for their visible weaknesses as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Talk to me about Joe. By the way, that article that I'm talking about is from theobserver.com. Why Survivor, our last middlebrow cultural artifact, is more vital than ever before. Was if anybody, I'll link to it in the show notes if anybody wants to read that. But yes, Joey Amazing is back. Kimmy, talk to me about you lived with Joe on Bayonne Beach. Yes. What was your takeaway about your time with Joe?
I mean, Joe is just a good natured guy. I mean, he's just a nice guy. He's not arrogant. His family is a beautiful family. And he brings that family values and cores with him. And that's being helpful and kind and doing what he can. And that's why, like last night, he made fire. It's, you know, his family is a very nurturing family. And that is what he brings into the show, plus his strength. I mean, he's got, you know, what, three or four sisters. So he's always been the taking care of the only boy kind of thing and lookout. And I think that's what he brings out on Survivor too.
Okay. Do you feel like that Joe is set up well where you can see a scenario where Joe goes on to win this thing?
No.
Okay. Why?
Already last night you had two people. You had Eric the firefighter.
Yeah.
He was talking to the kid in the pineapple shirt.
Gavin.
And, you know, they were talking, and Eric specifically said that he does not want to rely on Joe and Aubrey because they had their chances and they want someone new to win. So I think you have, again, two diverse people that have a common thought. Like, that's why I think the season is so hard. Whenever you bring a returning player with new players, you do have that target and that challenge. And a lot of them will be like, okay, well, let's use him for what I can do. I mean, I think it was the lawyer girl. Was it Aurora?
Aurora, yeah.
She even said, let him make the fire. You know, I'm cheering for him, but how long is she going to cheer? You know, it's just enough to get those comforts and those first couple challenges until either a merge or a tribe swap. And yeah, then you get out and you make your own connections. I mean, because they want an opportunity to play the game. You know, he's already had his chance. And Joe even said, he's like, oh, I got a good feeling about all this. I got a good vibe. Well, yeah, everybody's working and communicating. But again, like, whereas David, he was sitting there and saying, okay, I'm going to be their friend. And they were coming him, approaching him. Joe still takes on a little bit of a lead by making the fire and stuff. And so people have expectations of Joe.
Yeah, that's a really good point, especially with the Joe thing, that, you know, it always starts good for Joe. I remember in Second Chances, you know, Joey Amazing. Steven said he's Survivor MacGyver. Andrew Savage was gushing like, oh, what a guy. Everybody loves him to start.
In Second Chances, Joe and Fishback did not get along. They didn't want each other. And I had a sit down and I said, listen to me, you two, swallow your egos. Nobody would expect, if we had an alliance of me, Kelly Wigglesworth, Joe and Fishback, and we voted together and got out somebody like Jeremy. Mm-hmm. Nobody would expect it. I said, you know, you two coming together for a common cause, you need to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, couldn't get them to play together in the same damn playpen, you know?
So I understand the Steven part of this, because we've talked about this a bunch. And I really think it's it's not that he dislikes Joe, but we talked about this last night. But he feels like that Joe's going to win if you leave him out there. What was Joe's issue with Steven?
I think it was a trust thing.
Mm-hmm. He's like, why, this guy, I don't want to work with him. He's trying to vote me out all the time.
Yeah. It becomes a trust thing. And he liked having the, oh God, I love my island husband. I think he liked having the bigger, stronger guys around him, because then it was more
Joe did.
Joe did. So that way there was, you know, more of a chance of somebody else, you know, that was a more physical threat and challenges to go ahead and be another possibility to be voted off. Whereas mm-hmm. Steve, you know, Steven, he didn't have that physical threat.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, with David, you know, who is, you know, not exactly the same as Joe Anglim, maybe more of like a Steven, that he seems like that he's trying to get set up as being like sort of like a key person in terms of the votes, maybe. And so eventually, you know, people are going to learn how to provide for themselves maybe a little quicker. But if they're relying on like, you know, the returning player for, you know, being, you know, central to what are we going to do for the plan and what's going to happen with the vote, like that seems like a harder thing to get rid of.
Oh, absolutely. The returning players have a shorter shelf life on the show because you can use their wisdom for starting the fire, for suggestions on building the shelter, for doing those kind of things. But I mean, when it all comes down to it, once you're out there playing a challenge, I mean, it just depends on what kind of challenge it is. You know, I mean, even Kelly Wentworth, who is so big and strong, she's the only one that got whacked and was visibly bruised. Mm-hmm. So it becomes more of a level playing ground. And in the beginning, everybody still has all their strength, you know, for a few days, because you still, you know, you have a lot more food in your body from before you left. So it's once everybody else starts getting weaker, then it's like, okay, I don't need him to fish. I don't need anybody to do anything, because depending on the weather, depending on what resources you have out there, just because he's a great fisherman, if you can't find any fish out there, or if you don't have fishing gear, it's really not going to matter. I mean, there was plenty of times when Joe would go out fishing and wasn't catching anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's just anybody can do that. I mean, a lot of it's luck and coconuts. I mean, anybody can open up a coconut, but let the big guys open them up, because some of those suckers, I mean, you can take 40 minutes just trying to rip through all the husk and everything. Well, let Joey Amazing do it and let me save my strength for the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Kimmy, do you feel like that a returning player can win in the end if they're there with new players? Because when you look at these scenarios where people have come back and played, yeah, Rob won when it was, you know, him versus Russell, and he was up against, you know, Philip and Natalie. But, you know, we've seen Coach lose to a new player. Your old buddy Mike Scoopin lost to a new player. Like, do you think there's anything that maybe the jury would give the money to a new player as opposed to a returnee in a season like this?
I mean, if somebody makes it far enough along where they're making those relationships and not burning bridges, and anybody could win, because I mean, anything changes out there daily. I mean, I think that if you make the right choices, and at the beginning, a lot of it is the first couple of votes are very strategic. And at the end, I think that sometimes at the end, there's strategy, but there's also you have a comfortability with your alliance.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you make relationships, and I think it's anybody's game. I think that a returning player could win, but it's first getting over those first initial hurdles of how you're perceived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's more of an idea of like, oh, if you leave the returning players in the game, they're gonna win. But, you know, really, it's not necessarily the case. I guess Cochran won in the fans versus favorites season. He was up against Dawn and Sherry. So I guess.
It's about the relationships. And Cochran, he had he had a passion and you know, an underdog quality about him. And I mean, he's a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, I think it comes down to just what you think. Like, I love Jeremy in my second season. Okay. And if it couldn't be me winning, I want a man who loves his wife and his family and is all about that. I want him to win. I'm not saying that Tasha or Spencer, you know, weren't worthy, but I didn't have as many commonalities with them. So it was like, I think it has to do a lot with the personal relationships. Absolutely. And it could be something very simple, you know, it could be as simple as pick a number from 1 to 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We saw Aubrey also last night, probably the returnee that we saw the least from last night, other than we saw where Eric was talking about, well, we need to keep Joe around, but what if we got rid of Aubrey? Do you think that Aubrey is in danger, Kimmy?
I think so. I think that there comes a time where, I mean, even Jeff said it at the beginning that, oh, Aubrey, she's been out here, what, 76 or 78 days, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that some people that are new are like, look, she had 70 something days to play this game and get her chance. We should be at least able to play 10, 15, 18 game, 18 days. You know, she already did it. She couldn't cut it then, get her out now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is that animosity sometimes. You know, everyone's use the returning players as much as they're going to use you. I mean, that's just the nature of the game.
Kimmy, do you think it's any easier on David that it's his second time out as opposed to the third time for Kelly and for Joe and Aubrey?
Probably.
Like they're saying, he's cool. He's only playing his second time. But those guys, they're on their third time. That's enough.
Yes. Well, I mean, there could be a lot of that. But also, I think that David's nature, I mean, he's not an in-your-face kind of player. I mean,
no.
You know when Kelly's there. You know when Joe is there. You know, they're staples. I mean, and again, people saw the evolution of both Aubrey and David as being kind of timid and then growing mm-hmm. into themselves. You know, so he's a likable person. So I don't think that there'd be an initial threat to get out. But but Aubrey, she's smart. But I think that with the difference with Aubrey versus David is, yes, she has played twice and gone very far. So, you know, the returning players are like, okay. I mean, the new players are like, okay, she's been out here a lot. Get her the hell out.
Okay.
I mean, she's been on that island more than people that have been out there, you know, 3 times.
Yeah. Can you tell me about if Kelly and Joe get to the merge, based yeah. on your experience in the second chance season, do you feel like that they will be working together, or do yes. you feel like that? Okay, you do.
Yes, absolutely. They will work together because when Kelly first merged onto Bayon Beach, you know, and Bayon, we were Bayon strong, mm-hmm. like very Bayon strong.
Yes.
When Kelly first came on our beach,
right before the swap, right?
Yeah. Joe, I think, had been with her
right before the merge. I'm sorry. Well, after the swap. Second
before
swap.
A different swap. So Joe went off Bayon Beach and was with Kelly. And then Kelly came back to Bayon Beach and was with Joe. Those two Bayon, you know, the original Bayon people that were there were like, okay, what the hell's going on with Joe and Wentworth?
Mm-hmm.
Because they did have a connection.
Yes.
So it's just, they're very similar players. You have the male version and the female version.
But did that relationship sour at all as the game went on? Because this could be a false memory. I feel like that after the game was over, I feel like that that Kelly did not love Joe.
Well, when the votes are out there and what people tell you, I mean, I don't know all the dynamics, and I honestly just don't remember. But I just think that there's a lot of emotional hurt that goes on because you think that you can trust somebody because you did have a bond. But I think that Joe and Kelly would be a natural alliance at Emerge because mm-hmm. they do, you know, I feel like the two of them would be like, okay, we got to go find a hidden immunity idol. Let's go and look together, and that they'd come together. I just feel like they would.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would with the other players, but just from what they were doing together, what I saw on Bion, I think that they would work together.
You think it's the situation where it's the devil you know is better than, you know, working with these unknowns?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's they have the same mission. And you got to remember, when we had the reward challenge, you know, Kelly was there with her dad. Joe was there with his dad. Once you bring your family into it, it just makes it a little bit more of a bond.
Okay. Kimmy, I know you took very detailed notes during the episode last night. Did you have anything from your notes that you want to make sure we hit?
No, I mean, I think that we got all. Oh, you know what I do want to talk about is the advantage menu.
Yes, talk about the advantage menu.
Yes, the advantage menu. I thought that was a great twist to be able to use that as you see fit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that it's a unique thing. What I did not think was smart. What was the guy's name that got that?
Ron.
Ron. Yes. I just thought it was funny though, because when he found the note, and he had to go digging for it, he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna go get some water," because he found the advantage on the boat when they left the boat initially.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Let me go get some water." Goes out there and then is rolling around in the dirt. And it's completely covered in dirt. And then he's going to come back and be like, "Oh yeah, I just went to the well and got some water." That I thought was just not a smart thing. If you don't want people to think that you were digging or looking for an right. item.
And then he was like rolling around in the dirt also.
like rubbing it on him like he had a bench full of $100 bills.
He made it rain.
Exactly. But it was just very silly because... you know, it was a little bit more blatantly obvious. But I do like that he could either steal the reward or get an extra vote or get the individual immunity. I mean, but you can only use it for three tribals. So, I mean, it could be a completely moot advantage.
Right.
I mean, I like that it has potential.
Kimmy, did you feel like that there was one advantage in particular that you think was the best of the advantage menu?
Well, of course, that individual immunity.
Yes, yeah. The idol.
But I don't know about getting an extra vote, if that's going to be really advantageous that early on, because there's so many votes. And like you saw last night, four people had their name written down. So I just think that it's too all over the place. But I think the stealing the reward is a nice advantage, you know, to like boost the morale of your tribe.
Yeah, I know it's a little counterintuitive, but I do feel like that, especially with this group, because I really feel like that they're going to win a lot where if you could bring back a reward for your tribe, if you didn't win it, like I feel like that you'd be really celebrated for that. Right.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially since, you know, when they were initially, especially if it's a food reward or. I mean, well, heck, in the beginning, any reward. But when they were on the boat initially and they were getting off their supplies, I mean, obviously there was a lot of food. I didn't happen to notice that there was a lot of like pots and pans and utensils,
mm-hmm.
but all the perishable stuff that they were throwing over, like the bananas. In my book, the bananas are like the complete waste of time because
why?
They're heavy and cumbersome. They just bruise so easily in the transport. And they rot so quickly when you're on the beach.
Ah.
I mean, if you don't eat those bananas in the first couple of days, they're just all they do is attract bugs. I mean, the pineapples are the better idea in my book because they stayed a little bit longer and they don't get bruised as easily. But I remember when we were over in Cambodia.
Yeah.
Those freaking bananas, you got them there. I mean, literally 90% of them were bruised and you had to eat them right then.
Wow, Kimmy, this is good stuff that nobody's ever broken down the Survivor produce before here on the podcast. So, okay, so you say, all right, so give me the shopping list here. Okay, so you're on, so somebody who's listening to this that they're going to go play Survivor 39, there's all of them. So what is the leave the bananas? What should they, what's on the shopping list? Pineapple?
I think that the pineapple, me personally, I never want to see a mango again, but I mean, but even the coconuts that they go and they have on the boats, those are okay to take because they have a longer shelf life than the bananas. What was it? There was dragon fruit that lasted longer.
Dragon fruit.
It just depends on it. Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
But it didn't bruise as easily because the outside of it was firm.
Yeah. What's a dragon fruit look like? I don't think they have that on Long Island, Kimmy.
No.
I never saw one of those.
Like it looked like last night's immunity dragon idol. And it has like little spikes around the outside of it.
Yeah. All right. So that we may see a Survivor season, Kimmy, where everybody just leaves all the bananas on the boat.
You're welcome.
Yeah, they're gonna Survivor production is gonna have gonna be up to their eyeballs in bananas.
That's right.
Because
that's
a lot.
Right. Well, the bananas will last longer for them, you know, because obviously they're not getting bruised. But yeah. I mean, that's just my observation.
Kimmy, what did you think about Reem teaching Keith to swim? Do you feel like that she should have done that, or you think that she should have said, "Can you believe this guy doesn't even know how to swim?"
No, every season there seems to be somebody that doesn't know how to swim. Jervis on the first one, Roger on our season. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't know how to swim. I think that you want to make your team strong because you don't know how long you're going to be with them. So, I mean, even us, who was it? Was it me and Abby that was teaching Tasha? Because Tasha's not a swimmer. She drowned on my season. I mean, so you definitely want to have people that are going to be on your tribe.
Yes.
Know how to swim. There's a lot of water challenges.
Right. Now, Kimmy, I remember now you didn't want to get in the water in Australia, but it wasn't because you couldn't swim, right? You thought the water was gross.
I'm a very good swimmer. Well, Mike had killed the pig and then was washing the pig right along our beach.
Yes.
And there were little leeches there. And, you know, just like you, we grew up on Long Island. We have ocean water around. The outback water is that dirty, gross lake water that freaks me out. I would rather be shark bait and take my chances there than be crocodile chum. I had no desire. And we were in there. But, you know, I was also doing firewood and water and everything else. So, yeah, so dirt would get on me. It's not like any of us walk out of those places clean, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was in Cambodia, I was a fish. I was a mermaid everywhere I could be.
Yes.
It's just the different environment. I mean, I have something about lake water. I don't know if you feel the same way growing up, you know, surrounded by ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different thing. Just like there's a lot of people that do lakes and rivers that are terrified of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of crocodiles near where you guys were set up in the outback?
Well, I'm sure that they lived there. We didn't run into any, but it's just knowing that they're there. I mean, we're in their waters, we're in their territory. I mean, anything could happen.
Yeah. Of course, everybody remembers that you were in the ocean because that's how you knew where all the giant clams were.
Yes. Well, I knew. And I went out and I would go and collect the clams. And then like I made like a little area to put them so we could just go back and forth to the clam area, the designated clam spot.
And make sure
knew where they were.
And make sure that the ocean wouldn't ever run out of them.
Oh my God. I just the ignorance. Yes. Because of us 10 people camping on the beach, we're going to deplete the whole entire ocean of the clams. I mean, it was just silly. She had no concern.
Pumpkin, no.
No pumpkin. No, that's right. Clam gate.
Yeah.
Kids,
okay. Let's bring on some questions from the listeners. David Wisher wants to know, were there any no pumpkin, no moments in this episode? Was there anything that you were saying that to the survivors?
No. Well, yes, I guess when the guy was rolling around after he won his immunity thing, after he found his little immunity clue. I mean, why would you roll around and make it more blatantly obvious? No pumpkin, no. Don't do that. That was definitely a no pumpkin, no moment. I mean, it just made it very obvious that you went to do more than just go fill your flask from the well.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the way that Ron did that? He was like, I'm going to go get some more water. I mean, would you announce it like that on Survivor? Was that suspicious the way that he did that? Or would you just go get water?
I mean, there's two different ways. I mean, it could be just, okay, hey, I'm going to go get some water. But we all know that when we're out there, usually if you're going to get water, you'd say, hey, does anybody else need some water? You want to fill up your flask?
Kimmy, this is good stuff.
I mean, that's just the way you think about it. But it was also the first day. So people really don't know what to expect. I mean, it's very different when you're watching it on TV versus when you're out there. It's those little observations that you just start picking on right away. I mean, Kelly, when she was talking to David, because the one guy, the newscaster,
Rick, yes,
he was over by the food and Kelly was watching him going, what is he doing? She's like, I'm so suspicious of everybody. She's suspicious because she's played the game before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meanwhile, he's just like, oh, look at the food. We have so much food. And I'm laughing. I'm like, look at you and all your bruised bananas that are going to be dead tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Do you feel like that Rick was just like doing sort of like an inventory? Or do you feel like that? Do you look at it the way Kelly was looking at it? Like, oh, he's looking for a clue in the stuff that we got from the ship?
No, I don't think he was looking for a clue. Not at all. I mean, the stuff was all floating around all over the place. Any clue would have went. I think he was definitely doing an inventory. He looks like a bigger guy. And I'm not saying that as a jerk off, but I mean, you know, it's kind of like, oh, but he actually stood there. He's like, oh my gosh, it's so much food. It's crazy. And I'm laughing my ass off. I'm like, you have 10 people and perishables that are rotting at an accelerated rate because they're all ripped up and bruised. I'm like, you're going to be looking at that pile in 3 days going, there's nothing here. I mean, maybe they can make some mash out of it and get drunk.
Yeah. Kimmy, were you happy that after a couple seasons ago, when Sia got involved, they no longer have these chickens in the marooning?
Well, I got involved long before Sia ever did. So I'm yeah. not really sure.
Yeah, if Sia would have started showing up to those Survivor finales a long time ago, you could have got some money out of this, maybe.
Hell yeah, I could have. I mean, I think it's good because there's a lot of times when those chickens, I always felt bad for them, you know, especially being on the boat and getting thrown over. I mean, you could really damage those little guys, you know. Mm-hmm. There were some chickens that, were, like, even on our season, they were going the wrong way. I'm like, these are not flight birds. So if he got stranded out in the ocean, I mean, the poor thing. I mean, he'd be shark bait. How many chickens and shark bait? I mean, it's just... And then the irony is, of all things, my husband, when I married my husband, his family were chicken farmers. Like they had like these giant commercial poultry chicken houses. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, this is going against everything I stand for. crazy.
Are you still a vegetarian, Kimmy?
Yep, still a pescatarian.
Okay, pescatarian, yes.
And my dam and the great clams of the sea.
The great clams. But no bananas.
No. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Felipe wants to know, did you see any similarities between Deb and Reem?
No. I don't think so. I mean, I think that they're both smart. I think that Deb's personality is way toned down compared to Reem's. So, I mean, I think it's maybe that isolatedness. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that Deb was way more quiet,
right?
Very smart. But she was just quiet, where Reem, obviously, she had a very dominant personality.
Right.
I mean, she's just going to be a character to see.
Yeah. I thought that Deb was like an introvert that probably, you know, had no business going out and being on, you know, a television, that she seemed like she was very shy and didn't want to necessarily, or maybe had a different idea of what this all was going to be about, where Reem is, you know, a very big personality.
Well, I also think that when you think of Survivor, Deb's thinking of bringing her survival skills and doing stuff like that, not dealing with the social aspect of the game. I mean, and then also you're looking at the second season versus 38, mm-hmm. where you know what to expect. I mean, Deb's sitting out there thinking, okay, well, yes, I live in the Northeast. I can hunt, I can fish, I can start fire. I can do these things to survive. It's not that whole schoolyard, you know, picking sides, bullying, pulling the hair of the girl next to you kind of atmosphere that it really is.
Edward Morris wants to know, do you think that the Extinction Island will be a throwback to the early seasons? You know, a lot of people talk about how there's not enough that we get to see the survivors really surviving out there. Do you feel like that the Extinction Island will satisfy that for people?
I think that it will, and it's also because there's two less cast members this season. You know, there's 18 versus the 20. I mean, when I played, there was only 16 of us.
Yeah.
And so you got to see more of the individual personalities, you know, earlier on. Like, there were people that played last night that, I mean, I don't even know, like, I wrote down their name and they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's harder to see that. So people want to see the surviving and whatnot. I mean, I think Reem, it opened up her eyes, because when she got out there and then when they were showing the previews for next week, she's like, oh my gosh, how long am I going to be here and whatever. It's like, well, you signed up for this, bitch. You got to be there as long as you can. I mean, it's not going to be more than 39 days.
Yeah.
So figure it out, you know, put on your big girl panties and get through.
And Kimmy, don't read too much into if people we didn't hear from them, because in the Australian outback, Tina did not even get a confessional in the first episode.
Well, and she won the whole damn thing. Well, and that's the other thing. It's like sometimes you're watching and it's like, okay, well, they're playing, they're giving this person a lot of airtime. The axe must be coming down.
Yeah, it could go either.
Just so they could say they were there.
It could go either way. Mike Christensen has a good question. Cambodia was a brand new location for everybody playing in Second Chance. How much of an advantage do you think it is for David and Aubrey that they already played on these same beaches in Fiji compared to Kelly and Joe? Do you think that that is an advantage?
I think depending on if it was like the same time of year, like actually the same month that it was filmed, you'd have more of an advantage that way, because then you know the weather and you also know like food sources and stuff.
Okay, so I can answer this. So that Aubrey played in an even numbered season in Game Changers, which was 34, and this is an even numbered season. So Aubrey played in Fiji at the same time. David Wright played in the Rainier season in Fiji because he played in season 33.
Right. Well, then Aubrey would have a better chance, I think. But I mean, it's just, then you have the depletion of the natural resources that are there, too. I don't know how big of a radius that they get to go and explore and whatnot. So, you know, obviously with the weather and the rainy season, you're not fishing as much.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was there and then Aubrey came during the rainy season, I think that David would have more an advantage, because he'd be like, okay, this is when you have to go when the weather's like this. But because it's a little bit better and a little bit drier.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that it's going to be an even playing field. And I mean, you know, everything changes out there.
Yeah. I think that there's a little bit of a learning curve of terms of like, oh, okay, there's stuff that you could eat that's this way, or you can eat this type of plant, right, or they have this here. So I think I think it's this kind of stuff that everybody knows like by 5 or 6 days there. So just to get started, right, maybe a little bit of an advantage to be there before. This is from Ian Rice. How do you feel about Survivor no longer changing locations when filming? Kimmy, do you care about that stuff?
No, I mean, I think that it's easier for production, so I totally understand it from the monetary standpoint of it. And honestly, the freaking woods and a beach, it doesn't matter really what the location is.
Yeah, who cares?
Because it all looks the damn same to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're watching it, it's not like you're going, oh, there's something here that signifies this. It's not like you're playing in Egypt and you see the pyramids behind you to differentiate between locations.
No, we're long past that era.
Yeah, I mean, it's sand and water and some trees.
Yeah.
I mean, so it really doesn't matter. I mean, I think it makes more economical sense. You know, the only thing I'm going to hate is whenever they call me back for a third time and I got to go on another one of those long ass flights.
Yeah.
I keep putting that out to the survivor gods. Call me the third time. Third time's a charm.
What? Okay. So you definitely would play again. Was it the flight? You don't like flying, Kimmy?
No, it's just a damn long flight. And it's just that coming home with anticipation. I mean, by the time that we left, you know, Koh Rong, I mean, you had to take a boat, you had to take a bus, you had to take multiple flights. I mean, it was literally 48 hours of traveling before I got to the airport and my parents picked me up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, there were some locations that it's like, oh, okay. You know, it's not quite that long.
Kimmy, anything else that you want to talk about from last night's Survivor premiere or Survivor Cambodia or Survivor the Australian Outback or life?
No. I mean, I'm just excited to see, you know, what happens. I mean, it's just it's always fun to see the people the first day and how excited they are and how clean they are and how positive they are. And then after a couple of rounds of rain and sleepless nights and empty bellies, I love watching the change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fun. Do you watch with your boys?
Yes. My husband and I and the boys, we all watch.
Okay. Everybody's into it?
Yes. Well, my husband kind of has no choice. You know, it was
he's a good soldier. Yeah.
My husband was married to somebody else, obviously, the first time that I played on Survivor. And his ex-wife loved the show. And he's like, that stupid loudmouth New Yorker. Oh, I can't stand that. Because my husband's a good old Georgia boy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now here he is, married to that big loudmouth New Yorker.
So he watched the show and he had a negative impression of you from the first time around?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I was just a big mouth New York. A lot of people had, I don't know, they didn't, you know, if you're from not New York,
yes,
okay, and you have a 27-year-old know-it-all girl, I mean, I can be a little bit overwhelming.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously I've changed and I've grown up and I was different. Like, he didn't know it was me when we met. You know, but then once I told him, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I was on Survivor. He's like, oh my God, you're that loudmouth New Yorker girl that I didn't like.
You made a strong impression for 15 years to remember that.
My husband just said that's about the only time that he agreed with Jeff Marner was when he was in big loudmouth New Yorker and he wanted to choke me the first night.
Do you feel like that the portrayal of you on the show was not accurate, or do you feel like that they got it right and you're just a different person now?
This is what I try to tell people that are on Survivor. Every one of us have moments out there,
mm-hmm,
where you shine, okay? Where you're great and happy or sad, or you could be a Debbie Downer for 5 minutes. And it just goes with the flow of what they're weaving. I mean, everything that they show, we did do or say. It may not quite be, you know, at that time, or they don't show you the surrounding, you know, video around it. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. So I think that they show it, but I was just disappointed that there was a lot of things that went on in this last season that people that I was on my tribe with were surprised that they didn't show more of, you know, like trying to do the planning and votes and how much input that I did have with certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Just
yeah,
because they were like, oh, I mean, and then there was a funny thing where 90% of the time I was making fire out there for the fire pit. And Keith, you have Keith sitting there going, oh, you can't make any fire. This isn't working. And same thing with Jeremy. Oh, we can't make fire. And then I'd go back and I'd sit there and I'd make the fire. And then when I'm, you know, when I'm doing my little confessional, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I guess they're both firemen and used to putting fires out that they don't know how to start them,
mm-hmm,
you know? And here I am making the fire, but they don't show that, you know, it's just simple little things that show that
you played too early.
Some people are
now you need to know how to make a fire, Kimmy, because that's the final four challenge.
Well, it should have been my damn challenge because I would have beaten any one of their butts.
Yeah.
I'm making a fire challenge the day I got voted off in Cambodia.
How did you get so good at that?
Because I have a fire pit in my backyard. And for a long time, I was a single mama. And it was, I don't go out at night. I have my fire pit, a glass of wine. I had a spare room for any of my friends that might have a kid or want to stay the night. And you just stay at my house and drink and I'll feed you. And I love my fire pit.
And did you do it with Flint?
No, not all the time.
Okay.
Not my fire pit at home all the time, but you know. What? But you still know how to get the kindling going in the tinder. And
yeah.
You know, there are some people that, you know, they don't know the difference between something green, or they're like, oh, the driftwood's wet. Well, driftwood is great to burn, but you just let it dry in the sun for a little bit. I mean, it's a very dense wood. You know, bonfires happen all the time with driftwood, you know? So, but some people, they're like, I give up.
Okay. All right. So when Kimmy Kappenberg plays a third time, that everybody can know that you want to keep her around. She knows what what fruit to eat in what order, what's going to make a good fire, where the clams are. Okay.
Yeah, where the clams are. That's right. And I got pretty good at making the Survivor coconut popcorn, you know?
Yeah. And if you get a chicken, there's going to be more for you if you leave Kimmy Kappenberg alone, if she's on your tribe. Okay.
That's right. That's the same thing with the pig. When Mike made the pig, I'm like, look, there's more protein for you guys. Win a reward challenge that has burgers, more burgers for you.
Yeah. Well, now now they do like veggie burgers, Kimmy. This is like the golden era.
Oh, my God. I know. At the reward barbecue with my daddy, there was veggie burgers. I was like, yay. It was so funny because when we did the loved ones visit out in Cambodia, my dad, who was turning 70 like a month later after we did that, my dad was at the grill and cooking, and they had beers there. And somebody gave my dad a beer. And that was the first time in my life that I had ever seen my dad drink a beer. I was like, who is this man that came to Cambodia? He's like, well, I'm just doing what the locals are doing.
When in Rome. Yeah.
But yeah, that was a funny and a great moment to share with my dad.
All right. Well, Kimmy, thank you so much for making some time to talk to us about all this stuff going on here after the premiere. Anything else you want to let people know?
If they ever go and get to vote people back.
Vote for Kimmy.
Come on. Vote for Kimmy. I mean, come on.
You did it once. You remember how to do it again, people. Okay.
Yes. It's not rocket science. Let's all just get on board. Come on, pumpkin.
Okay. Well, Kimmy, thank you again. So nice to get to catch up with you whenever we get to do one of these.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to next week.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Kimmy.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Kimmy Kappenberg back here on Rob Has a Podcast. Very fun to catch up with Kimmy. That's going to do it for us here today. Next up, we are going to get into our Survivor Feedback show coming up with Arissa Cox. Really excited about that one. Host of Big Brother Canada. She was on location during these first 3 days with the Survivor Press Corps. So we'll talk to her about some of her behind the scenes stories. And of course, your feedback, robswebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282. RHAP. You can also email the show, which you can do for these recaps every single week, survivor@robhasawebsite.com. So be on the lookout for feedback show coming up. I'm going to record that one on Saturday. Also going to talk to Jordan Kalish on our This Week in Survivor History episode. We're going to do a couple different things here as we're experimenting a little bit. So I hope you check that one out. Of course, the RHAP B&B and Y Reem Lost are also going to be coming your way this weekend in our Survivor podcast feed and our Wrap Ups podcast feed. Then, of course, the Wiggle Room still to come before we get ready to do it all again next week for week number two of Survivor Edge of Extinction. Thank you so much to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast who make all of this podcasting possible. I'm also going to get together with the First Lady of Podcasting for our Patron 5 for 5 later on a Thursday night. So be on the lookout for that. We'll talk to Nicole about her thoughts on the Survivor premiere and much more in our Patron podcast feed, where we have almost 200 patron only episodes of Rob as a Podcast available to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. If you want to be involved with that, you can go to robasawebsite.com/patron to find out everything we're doing in our Rob as a Podcast patron community. Thank you so much for listening to this one. Thanks so much, Scott St. Pierre, for putting this all together. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.